Hello everybody, welcome back to Better Than Bad. As always, I'm your host Jess, and today I am joined by James. Hello James.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining me. How are you? How is everything going?
I'm doing well, thanks. The weather's getting better and coming into summer, it's not so bad. How about you?
Yeah, good. I'm really enjoying the fact that the weather's getting, you know, warm and I don't have to go out with a coat on. It's great. Do you want to tell the people who we're going to be talking about today?
Well, we are going to be talking about the internet's favourite Danish boyfriend who's known for a bit of cannibalism and looking so good in blood. It's Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes. Why was it that you wanted to talk about Mads? Because this was someone that you suggested. This wasn't someone who was on any of my lists, despite the fact that I really love him as an actor. But what was it that drew you to talking about Mads Mikkelsen today?
Well, the guy's just held my attention ever since I saw him in the Hannibal TV series, which I absolutely loved. And I had seen him before in Casino Royale, like most English-speaking audiences had. But it's in Hannibal, which I really saw something that I just thought was absolutely magnificent. And since then, I just kind of followed his career, and from his disappointing ventures in Hollywood to his absolutely astounding performances he gives back in his home of Denmark.
Yeah, so he was someone that, same as you really, I became very aware of him through the TV show Hannibal. And he's just kind of, I feel like he's a face that just sort of pops up everywhere every so often. Like, you'll be watching a film and then he's there, which is probably a great position to be in as an actor, because he seems to never stop working, which is what all actors want.
Yeah, and there's always something in there. When he pops up, it's one of those great actors who, as soon as you see his face, you just get a bit uneasy. It's like, no matter what character he plays, no matter how much of, say, an everyman or kind person he is, there just feels like an element of danger lurking within his characters. And it's just really intriguing and holds my attention so much.
Yeah, definitely. So for anyone who is listening who maybe doesn't know who he is, just a little quick lowdown. He is a Danish actor, and he was initially a gymnast and a dancer, and then he achieved worldwide recognition as an actor for his role as the main antagonist in Casino Royale, and then later appeared in a multitude of projects, including Hannibal, Doctor Strange, and many, many, many others. We're going to be talking about two of his films today. As people may or may not know this podcast, the basis of it is that we take their highest rated film and their lowest rated film. We do a little compare and contrast. So today we're going to be talking about The Hunt, which is his highest rated film with 8.3 stars on IMDb and a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 92%. And then we're also going to be talking about one of his lowest films, because he had an eclectic bunch, some of which weren't very easy to find in the UK to watch. And the one that we did end up choosing was Exit, which has 5.8 stars on IMDb and a 44% Rotten Tomatoes rating. We're going to start off by talking about Exit because it came out first. Let's do things a bit chronologically here. So just a little lowdown on what it's about. Like I said, 5.8 stars on IMDb with a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 44%. It is a Swedish drama film directed by Peter Lindmark. The film premiered in 2006 at the Copenhagen International Film Festival. It most notably stars Mads Mikkelsen and Alexander Skarsgård, amongst others. And it is about a man called Thomas who runs an investment company and is arrested for the murder of his business partner when his fingerprint is found on the murder weapon. When he tries to call his lawyer, the phone is answered by someone who he thought had committed suicide years ago. The dramas. Had you seen this film before?
No, I had been aware of it because Mads Mikkelsen and Alexander Skarsgård, that's quite a pairing to put together in a film, but this was a first time viewing for me.
Same here, I'd never seen this film, I'd also never heard of it. So it was brand new information for me. What were your sort of, if you were to round up your thoughts on it, what were your overall thoughts of this film?
So I think it's a film with quite a bit of potential for a story about past sins within this cutthroat business world, but the way it's delivered just left me uninterested, and it felt so unremarkable, really, and that's a shame considering the talent.
Yeah, it's a story that definitely seems to have a lot of potential there. The basic premise, I mean, even when, you know, I'm reading out the synopsis, it there's something there. It sounds very intriguing. But I agree that it felt a bit lackluster at points. It felt like the pacing was slightly off, and it didn't really draw me in. So I found it quite difficult to stay engaged with it. And when you're watching something in a language that you don't speak, you have to stay engaged with it. Otherwise, you literally do not know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it felt really difficult to like keep engaged and watching, which I think at times had me sort of floating away from it slightly and then going back and being like, I don't know where we're at. I don't speak Swedish. I don't know what's going on. But there were, you know, there are elements to it that certainly were interesting. I think one of my favorite moments was the little like chase scene where he's running away from the police. And found that quite compelling and fun to watch. But yeah, overall, I just think it kind of fell a bit flat for me.
I'd agree with that. I mean, there's something interesting there in how he's framed for murder, he's got to prove his innocence and bring the real guilty party to justice, but he's not someone who can fight, who's got tactical maneuvers on him. The only thing he really has is money, and that isn't enough. But I got this impression from both the characters and the writers that there seemed to be no idea about what to do next. And I'm not asking like the characters to be meticulous planners who got everything in bullet points up to the nearest second, but just feel like the characters were fumbling around in the dark and the writers just unsure of what directions to take point A to point B.
It felt like at points they were kind of throwing loads of different things in to kind of almost feels like they were throwing things at a wall to see what sticks, right?
Yes.
And you were just kind of like, you had fun chase scenes and then suddenly it was all like business jargon and very intense scenes like that. And then there was also kind of like the thriller aspects to it as well, with, you know, the murder scene and like, the scene with the wife holding the gun and all of these different things. So it was just overall, it was sort of a layer of mystery over the top of it that sort of half gets resolved at the end with the videotape. And you're like, oh, okay, so he was involved somehow, but it's still not fully clear. And I'm not one of those people that needs every answer to be laid out for me in a film. I sometimes like to be able to fill in the gaps myself, but I think with this particular type of film, you kind of need the answers to be there. Otherwise, you're kind of left a bit unsatisfied.
Yeah, it's interesting. With like that revelation at the end that maybe he had a key hand in it, it felt a bit, for me, out of left field. Because the film up to till then didn't have any ambiguity about is he really a guilty party or is he actually more cutthroat and backstabby than he's let on. They tried to paint him as an everyman, which is interesting enough considering he's someone rich enough to buy his daughter a pony. And it just felt a bit, like you said, let's see what happens if we throw all this at the wall.
Yeah, and it's true what you say, actually, because, you know, that idea of painting him as the everyman, but then he is extremely rich, and it sort of, it lands in a way that's very disingenuous, and it feels really difficult to, well, not necessarily, because you do sympathise with him off the bat. You're like, oh, this guy's been framed for murder, and then he's going about proving his innocence in the completely wrong way, and you're like, they're like, oh, God, how many wrong decisions can you make? But then, he's so rich, but then you're supposed to believe that he's like grinding his way up to the top. I don't know. It's just sort of, it feels very disingenuous and difficult to completely sympathize with him the whole way through. And then, as you say, you get to that revelation at the end and it feels a bit off kilter because for the whole time you've been made to believe that this is the guy that we should be rooting for and he's innocent and he's not done anything wrong. And then you see that he absolutely has been involved in some pretty dodgy things.
Mm.
I'm sure there's a message in there somewhere about how the business world is cutthroat and everyone's got their hands dirty at some point. But
yes,
I don't know. I just feel like for the scope of what it seemed like they were trying to achieve, it just felt like it felt very flat for me at the end.
Agreed. And I don't think what helped was from essentially the first moment, it's this voiceover pretty much dumping all this information that you need to know about the business and that before you really get into the present day stuff. And sometimes it's just nice to have a bit more show, don't tell. And I suppose there's some instances which they had to actually verbalize rather than rely on the actors and the scenes showing, like particularly the background of the company and how they got into prominence. But it just felt a bit like, okay, let's get this out of the way and then we'll move on. And it just felt a bit difficult to initially get through for me.
Yeah, and I feel like as well, it's true you say it's that show don't tell idea. Most audiences will be able to gather that this is a business that's high up in that field in the investment world, and they won't need you to fully explain the entire history of this business from start to finish for you to understand where they're at and why they're at this precarious position. You can see that through the stress of the characters and the way that they navigate the world. And I think part of that's just like people, you know, filmmakers and whatnot, being able to trust their audiences that they're going to be able to understand what's going on and they don't necessarily need to be spoon-fed absolutely everything.
No, I agree with that. I'll be honest, I don't have a lot to say about this film. I'm a bit struggling for points at this point.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the man of the hour.
Yes.
Mr. Mads. I think he does a great job in this. I mean, it's not lost on me that he's a great actor, and I think he lands himself in this role really well. It's a role that I think suits him. He fits that profile quite well for me. I as much as I found this film difficult to kind of get along with, he wasn't difficult to get along with so much that, like, I thought his performance was very grounded and easy to believe.
I agree with that. He's definitely carries the film with his performance. And it's interesting because in his home country, Mads had won quite a few awards by this point for a few films like Pusher 2. But in the UK, this 2006 film was actually released in 2013. And that was during the time of when all these Scandi noir medias and films and TV shows were coming out and being hits. So it's interesting to see how this film, which was essentially released in the same year as Casino Royale originally, didn't come into English speaking territories until he'd already started on Hannibal and he'd been in The Hunt, which was quite buzzy around award season.
Yeah, I think sometimes a lot of studios do that where they see an actor's becoming more and more popular and then they'll go into the deep, dark depths of the studio's files and find some film that they were in however many years ago and they throw it and they either re-release it or give it a wider theatrical release, whatever it might be, in the hopes that it'll draw people in because they see the name of the actor and they go, oh, okay, that's this person that I know and I've seen him on Hannibal and I'd like to see everything that he's in. So I feel like the part of it will be that aspect of these studios being like, ooh, we can make some money by re-releasing this. But it is strange. Yeah, I actually didn't know that it had a later release in the UK. But I guess that makes sense based on where he was at in his career and, like I said, drawing more people in because they knew his face. And also Alexander Skarsgård as well, sort of two people that slowly came up the ranks on the sort of UK/US film industry and have become more and more popular.
Yes, that's right, because Skarsgård would have been doing True Blood for quite a few years at this point.
Mm. So, it's interesting to see when and where these films come out, particularly if, you know, they're from other countries. I think sometimes it takes a while for them to get released in other places, depending on who's in it and who's backing it as well, who the director is, who the studio is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of strange that this came out around that time. But then I you're right in that sense that there was that weird period where everything was a Scandi drama. Everything was a Scandi crime drama.
Yeah, it's fun to look back on how people were really taken with that at the time.
Yeah, it goes ebbs and flows, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it's like Parasite wins Best Picture, and then we've got like Squid Game and more South Korean properties popping up.
Yeah, no, it is that. It's sort of people go, it sounds awful to say that it's like a trend. Because these amazing films, you know, when you mention things like Parasite and that cinema has existed for years, but people weren't necessarily looking at it. And then they go into this kind of thing of being like, oh, I'm going to watch more Korean stuff, or, you know, during this period, I'm going to watch more like Scandi Nordic dramas. And then it sort of goes on to the next thing. And it's like, oh, they're still being made. They're still good. It's just a shame that Exit maybe didn't live up to those expectations.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, especially with such talented performers in there.
Exactly, yeah. But everyone's got to have a stinker. There's always got to be at least one. Sometimes there's more than one, but there's always got to be at least one. So we will move on to our next film, which is The Hunt, which is his highest rated film. Like I said before, 8.3 stars on IMDb with a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 92%, so very highly regarded. It is a Danish psychological drama directed by Thomas Vinterberg. The film premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2012. Mads Mikkelsen also won Best Actor at the Cannes Film Festival for his role. It is set in a small Danish village around Christmas time and follows a man who becomes the target of mass hysteria after being wrongly accused of sexually abusing a child in his kindergarten class. This is a very heavy film. Very heavy. Had you seen it before?
Yes, I remember when Blockbuster was closing down, one of my localish ones were having a big sale on their remaining stock, and I just got a load of DVDs and stuff, and this was one of the copies I got from it, and I watched it, well, as is natural with me, I bought it and then I watched it, let's say, months later, because and yeah, I just remember thinking it was exceptional, but not an easy watch. It's quite uncomfortable, I found.
Yeah, this is I have a weird vague recollection of watching this film when I, because like I said earlier, I really enjoyed Hannibal. I was a little bit obsessed with it because Silence of the Lambs is my favorite film of all time, so then watching Hannibal, very excited about it. And then I have this vague recollection of watching this film, but like on a really bad YouTube download thing, because I was like, oh, I want to watch more stuff that's got Mads Mikkelsen in it, but then I can't remember anything about it other than the basic premise. So when I watched it this time, it felt like a brand new film, so I'm not even sure if I ended up watching the whole thing. Maybe I just watched like a couple of clips and thought I'd watched the whole film. But no, so I'm gonna say that this is my first time properly viewing it, and it's one of those films that is great. I would recommend it. I probably won't watch it again, not because it's bad, but because it is so heavy that I feel like you have to be in the right headspace.
No, I'd agree with that. It's, I mean, it's a lot. And Mads's performance is just absolutely heartbreaking. And that's part of the reason why it's such a difficult watch, because it, just to see him going through such a horrendous situation is really uncomfortable. And it's very, very good, but yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, and if you for anybody listening who hasn't seen it, if you want to see some spectacular acting, then look no further than this film. The church scene in this film is quite possibly one of the best acting scenes I've ever seen. Just this Mads Mikkelsen's ability to just have this slow build of emotion was spectacular. It was so like raw and real, and watching him go from sort of just being sat there like, no, I'm going to get through this and it's going to be fine, to this just build up to being upset, then being angry, was just the scope of what he had to do in that scene alone, let alone mm-hmm. the rest of the film, is incredible. So if you are like me, big fan of watching amazing acting, then this is the film to watch. But obviously go into it knowing that it's very heavy. Maybe check the trigger warnings before you watch, because it is a lot. But I think part of the reason why it's so like uncomfortable, there's a lot in this film. I'm not usually the type of film viewer who is particularly like clued up with some of the technical elements of filmmaking, but I was noticing a lot of like the really tight and claustrophobic shots that were used to make it, that where there were scenes where you almost felt like you were practically on top of Mads Mikkelsen, that made you feel like you were in this headspace of like this claustrophobic feeling. And then there were also these shots where it was really expansive and wide but really dark, and then you felt like it was sort of very lonely. It emphasized that loneliness. And I think as a whole, this is one of the few times in film where I have kind of just immediately noticed those technical elements and how they've mm-hmm. enhanced things. Obviously when you watch film, I feel like you're always going to notice them, but maybe not, it'd be sort of a more subconscious thing. But this was the time where I really was like, oh wow, like they've really packed this into a claustrophobic shot, so you feel it.
No, agreed. It's a phenomenal way to capture how pretty much his life has crumbled before his very eyes. He just tried to be nice and he found himself vilified, and the camera work just exceptionally captures how we saw in the beginning he is part of a seemingly loving community, but then he feels so alone, and we just see how the fragility of it all, and just a quiet reflection on human cynicism in really devastating ways.
Yeah, and the I really liked the way that this film managed to capture how it affects not just him, but the people around him as well. How it genuinely, this, like you said, a very loving community seems to crumble entirely because of this accusation, and mm-hmm. how it not only affects his relationship with all the other people, but it affects their relationships with each other, because they immediately become less trusting of everybody, and they're rather than having those scenes where it's all very jovial and they're all together, they're all very separate after the accusation comes out. And then there's a really nice build as well. You have the beginning of the film, it all is sort of ticking along nicely. You kind of know that the ball's going to drop at some point, but it's all ticking along nicely, and then suddenly it comes crashing down, and you just see all of these people don't quite know how to handle this information. And like you said, sort of devastating results and circumstances that really just send you over the edge. Even as a viewer, you're there on the edge of your seat the whole way through.
Yes, and one point which I felt really captured it well was his relationship with Nadja, his girlfriend, and mm-hmm. how he's going through all this stuff, and Nadja asks, did he actually do what he's accused of? And you can just feel the hurt and the betrayal as the one person who stood by him at this point just asked that question, and he just feels betrayed and alone because she had even the slightest doubt that she had to ask. And it's just quite a saddening moment for him, as he's just gone from having one person in his corner to at that moment being just all alone against a community which is all turned against him.
And the sort of the build up of him kind of, he's sort of almost gripping onto this community for dear life and trying to prove, and I guess it's difficult as well because you can't expect people to just move away, and he refuses to because he knows that he's innocent, but it's sort of like really clinging onto this and trying to prove his innocence, and it slowly gets like the, it gets worse and worse for him as it goes along, mm-hmm. and more and more like really quite dark and twisted things start happening. They have the scene, spoiler alert, sorry for everyone, the scene with the dog where they kill the dog, which is horrendous and completely unnecessary. What did the dog do, you know? And then you have the scene in the supermarket, which again is just harrowing in its own way, and again superbly acted by Mads, I think.
Yes, you can feel his bubbling frustration throughout as everything in his life just seems to implode. And it's established well in the beginning when he's talking with Theo about his best friend, about his custody of his child, and how Lucas, Mads' character, essentially needs to stand up for himself a bit more. And then all throughout this film, he's trying to just... he's trying to hope for the best, because he, while he tries to like mend bridges and assure everyone it's not true, they're not interested in listening. They heard this horrendous thing and they want to believe it. So that, and it just becomes a bit much when he's physically assaulted in the supermarket. And it's at that moment where he finally stands up for himself and he just essentially pays back the physically imposing man on the deli counter with a headbutt. And I'm in two minds, because after the horrendous treatment he had, I was glad to see him essentially pay it back. But at the same time, it's so heartbreaking that it all had to reach that point, that he had to stand up for himself in that way. And it's just really shows how bad things get. And I'll be honest, as soon as the dog died, I mean, I didn't like that you had that adult sitting on top of Lucas's teenage son, Marcus, and just punching him in the face. But then when Fanny the dog dies, I just wanted Lucas to burn that community to the ground. I mean, it's, they seem to be operating on a mindset of they're associated with him, so they're as guilty or have some kind of culpability, but that's just extra cruel. And I just hated the, I mean, very well done to capture how horrible the situation is in horrendously escalating ways, but when you kill a dog, it's just unforgivable. And I just wanted Lucas to say, fuck this, I don't deserve this, I don't want to be in this community, because Jesus Christ, that was horrendous.
And it is one of those, the film really captures this idea of like mass hysteria and this idea of people just kind of as a group, as a collective, just becoming so obsessed with righting a wrong, or you know, something that they believe that this person has done, that they go to these extreme lengths to almost prove that they are the better person. And it toes that line of questioning, okay, well, who is the bad guy at this point? And it's an interesting way of framing it, because we as the audience know that this guy is innocent, so we're automatically going to be angry at these people for doing the things that they're doing. But then there's also the part of us that understands to a certain extent, up to that point, I agree, where up to the point where they kill the dog, at least, you have this understanding of, okay, well, if you heard this accusation, you would immediately distance yourself from that person. You would immediately give them a wide berth, because you wouldn't want to be associated with them. So it sort of has this kind of strange aspect to it where there's sympathy on both sides up to a point, and then it just spirals into this absolute chaos. And something that I thought was great, and I'm completely spoiling the end of the film here, so if anybody is still listening who has not watched the film, then maybe pause this and come back later. But at the end of the film, he clears his name and everyone's, you know, happy and jovial again, and then they go out on a hunt in the woods, and someone shoots at him. And it's this idea that he's not ever really going to be able to move forward from this point, because there will still be people in this community who don't trust him.
Yes, it's I think the framing of the film, where we see from Lucas's point of view and we know that he didn't do it, that does a lot of heavy lifting, because I think if we're looking from the parents' point of view, then it makes sense that they're going to worry about their children, especially with this accusation coming to mind, but they're not going to believe that a child would lie about such a horrendous thing, especially where, and it's interesting, especially with Clara, the little girl who tells the lie, that she doesn't know the weight of what she's lying about. She doesn't know what's going to happen just because she says these things, but it does all come out because of it. And It gets to the point when even Clara admits to her mother that she was wrong, and the mum responds, no, it all happened. Because we know Clara's, we know she's trying to admit what she did was wrong, but also the mother is worrying that maybe she's trying to walk back the seriousness of what could have been such a horrific thing that might have happened. So it is interesting, both the perspectives that have essentially build this film and get us on both sides to a point.
Yeah, it's sort of masterfully written, in my opinion, just being able to encapsulate all of that and make you feel sympathy for all sides, understanding it, being able to place yourself in the two different sets of shoes, basically, and be like, okay, well, if I was in this position, I probably would act like this, but then if I was in his position, I'd act like this. So it's sort of this kind of idea of you kind of being able to sympathize with people, and then also seeing the things that this community does that completely just like the mistakes that they make, because they are not prepared to deal with this. Something I thought that was absolutely wild was when he was accused of what he was accused of, and then the principal of the kindergarten was like, okay, finish your shift. What do you mean finish your shift? I was like, no, you need to send him home straight away. And there's all these mistakes that these people make that they're then trying to back up from, and all these things that they are trying to sort of cover their own tracks to a certain extent because they feel complicit, guilty, whatever it might be. And I just think that it was masterfully done, and I think all of the performances across the board were brilliant. Yes. And really captured every aspect of that, but particularly the man of the hour, Mats. He just, I was blown away. I knew he was a good actor. We all know he's a good actor, but this was just on another level.
Yes, he was phenomenal in capturing this guy who's just a guy. He's not a monster. He's lived a lonely life. He just wants to get things back on track. But the steps, which it seemed like he was going in the right direction, are just essentially dusted away because, well, the principal, after she hears the accusation, she calls his wife and lets him know about it. And I'll be honest, if I was in that situation, in the principal's situation, I don't know how I would have handled the whole thing. But it's just from his perspective, that betrayal, that how could you do that and make my life worse? And he just captures it so phenomenally. He has such a humanity and a sadness to him, when he's just trying to be a good dad and to be a lovely teacher to these children, but because of a sense of what happened, his life is never going to be the same again.
Yeah, no, it's sort of devastating to watch, and that hinges on Mads's performance.
Mm-hmm.
This seeing, like we said before, this sort of everything come crumbling down, and how he tries to handle that, and how he goes through many moments where he handles it in a variety of different ways, and the entire film hinges on his performance and him being able to really capture those emotions. And he just does it so well and so effortlessly that you can't help but root for him and want good things and feel bad for him at every turn. And then right at the end, feel even more, you know, you end the film and you want it to be resolved and you have that lovely moment where they're all together again and you think, yes, he's finally proved it and everyone's moved on. And then that reality comes catching back up to you, and you're like, oh. And so you kind of end the film like, oh, well, that on a bit of a downer, like, okay. But that works really well for what I think the film was trying to achieve.
Yeah, and one added thing about watching it in this day and age is, yeah, the film's not an easy watch, but we've been through rampant victim blaming that's come along with Me Too, Time's Up, and cancel culture, and it just feels there's an added level of difficulty to watch a film about someone who's been wrongly accused for something awful and has been at the center of what can be called a witch hunt. And I am aware that it's not this film's fault for what would arise in the public consciousness afterwards, and victim blaming is not a new thing. It's definitely been around longer than the past decade, but at the same time, it just felt like there's an unfortunate extra layer of uncomfortableness when I watched it now as opposed to a decade ago.
Yeah, no, I definitely found that when I was watching it, it felt it's just something that I haven't seen before, particularly given the circumstances, like you say, in recent years. I don't think we'd necessarily, I mean, we might at some point, but I don't think we necessarily would, it's unlikely that we'd see a film like this in like today's times.
Yeah.
Because of where we're at as a society. So I it was kind of odd to watch it and it be from that perspective, because then you do kind of sit there like, oh, okay. I was worried that they were going to hit us with some kind of twist at the end, do a Black Mirror moment, and you were going to be like, and so you kind of have that fear where you're going to, am I rooting for the bad guy this whole time? But they don't do that. But it is certainly like an interesting story. It's, you know, but I agree, it's sort of a difficult topic to go through.
Yeah, but I mean, in spite of that, I still think it's an exceptionally made film, and Mads Mikkelsen, this is one of his finest performances, and I just wish more American films would use him for powerful dramas like this rather than having him be like, wear a really cool jacket but do barely anything in Chaos Walking.
Because this is the thing about his career, is that, you know, and you touched on this earlier, but like in, you know, Denmark and other European countries, when he's involved in the films, Sweden, etc., he seems to play these roles that are sort of like heavy, leaning into the drama side of things and really showcasing his acting. But then when you come over here, and I think this is because Hollywood's obsession with accents,
yes,
and putting these sorts of European accents, you know, the Danish accent, Swedish accent, that sort of stuff, in the villain category, and even the British accent to a certain extent gets labelled into that. And this idea of like this European accent being a villain, and so he gets put into this box. And now, typecasting isn't always a bad thing. It keeps you working. And sometimes actors don't really care because they get the jobs and they do what they need to do to make their money. And that's fine. But you sort of look at the scope of his career elsewhere and you think, why can't we see him in something like that over here. And I think it's kind of interesting with a show like Hannibal, because he kind of had, obviously he was playing the villain, but in a way where he was able to really flex those acting muscles still. So that's an interesting take on it, and was probably a good sort of introduction to his acting for a lot of people. But like, I'm scrolling through his IMDb at the moment, and yeah, most of his sort of big blockbuster moments in the US are playing villains. And I really do think it's the accent.
Yeah, that does make sense. I suppose when you've essentially done quite a few big profile villainous roles, then yeah, it makes sense that Hollywood's gonna be like, well, you've done that well, so can you do it again for this film? But it's just a shame there's not a bit more variety for him in these English speaking roles.
Yeah, and I think that I do feel like we're seeing a bit of a change in the industry. And I think part of that's due to films like Parasite, like you mentioned earlier, where people are being more willing to look outside of just American cinema or UK cinema and look at other countries and the wealth of cinema that's out there. And I think that part of that is also changing the way that people get cast in things. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder whether at some point in the future we might see him do something that's a little bit different from what we've grown used to seeing him in the Hollywood films, because people are becoming more accustomed to seeing different types of performances from people that they would typically put into a box. So it'll be interesting to see how, due to our own like, and part of this is all like streaming and everything like that, where you have access to more foreign language films. I wonder whether in the future we'll see a bit of a change in the type of thing that he gets cast in, based on the fact that more people will see him in these kind of hard-hitting dramas like The Hunt.
I'd hope so, because he has a lot more to offer, and it feels like on this side of the pond they're not really taking advantage of the depths his acting prowess can go in. And in all honesty, with The Hunt and another round, he should have been Best Actor nominated for both of those, because those were absolutely phenomenal performances.
Yeah, because I watched Another Round, is also another great film. But that as well, because it was strange, because he was BAFTA nominated for that, I believe.
Yes.
And the film was nominated for the Best International Feature Film. But you kind of sort of sit there and think, if you're recognising that the film is great, then why didn't you look at the acting? And this seems to happen a lot with international films, especially within the Oscars. Because it's like, I remember when Parasite was winning everything and everyone was like, well, why aren't the lead actors nominated in their categories that year? And it's, again, I think it's just slowly but surely we're starting to see these film awards become less local they're sort of opening their eyes to all sorts of different films from different parts of the world. And I just think it's this slow progression of allowing people into the, you know, the acting categories. But I completely agree with you, like his performances in both of those films absolutely should have got him some more awards nods. And obviously he got the Cannes Best Actor for this film. But it's not enough. There should have been more.
Yes, I agree. I'm well done, Daniel Day-Lewis, for getting your third acting nomination, but you've got two. Come on, let Mads have a nomination at least.
Share them around. Come on, don't be so selfish. Do you have any other like film favourites of his?
Yes, I quite liked Men in Chicken, which is, if you only know Mads from his roles in Hollywood and the roles which he gets awards recognition from, then this is a very much different role than you expect. It's like a bizarre Danish The Island of Dr. Moreau, and Mads' character can be described as a short-tempered serial masturbator. And yeah, it's really darkly humorous. It's very bizarre, and it's one of those films which leave you uncertain of whether to laugh or to just be horrified by what they're doing in the film. But it's such a different role for him, and he does it so, so well.
I might have to give that a watch. Sounds intriguing. wow.
Yeah.
I did not expect at any point in this podcast episode for someone to say serial masturbator. so thrown me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You're bringing the surprises today.
Bringing the class.
Are there any other like performances that you sort of are a particular fan of?
I'll just give another shout out to another round, because his dance moves in that are worth watching alone for that.
Mm.
And I quite liked him in Valhalla Rising, where he's essentially a mute, one-eyed warrior who's a violent force of nature and a harbinger of death. And he bloody well sells it. Other than that, I just mention Hannibal again, because I saw somebody describe the different Hannibals so well, in that Brian Cox plays a serial killer, Anthony Hopkins plays Dracula, and Mads Mikkelsen plays Satan. And it's fitting, because he's suave, he's seductive, and he sells the hell out of that cannibalism stuff.
Yeah, that series is weird, because they made all that food look really nice, and then you're sat there like,
no.
And you're like, this is distressing. But like, again, his performance in that is unsettling, to say the least. And you're sort of always on edge when he's on screen, but he's got complete control of the situation. And as much as that show seemed to sort of teeter off into a very strange direction in the third season, it really was just impeccable acting from the entire cast, but particularly him. And as someone who's a massive fan of The Silence of the Lambs, you kind of go into these things and you're like, oh, is anyone going to be as good as Anthony Hopkins or whatever? He was as good a different performance.
Yes.
But I like that. I like when people take on a role that's as famous as like Hannibal Lecter and they make it different. And I just thought that was a great thing for him to be able to do. Yeah, amazing. Like, and that was what I know him from. I've also seen him, obviously, in things like Casino Royale and his big blockbuster things. But yeah, the other thing for me that I probably really like him in is Another Round. I thought that was a really, really brilliant film. And you're right, his dance moves are great, because he did used to be like a professional dancer. So man's got rhythm.
Yes, come on, Hollywood. There's musicals you can cast him in. Just that should be his audition tape.
Yeah, why has this man not been in a musical yet? He can dance. I'm sure he can sing as well. Get him in a musical. Mm. We need more movie musicals in our life.
Exactly. Just a question for you. Hannibal, do you think they'll ever get to do season 4 and adapt Silence of the Lambs?
Well, I know the reason why they weren't able to adapt it was because they didn't own the rights for Clarice Starling.
Mm-hmm.
That was owned by a different studio. And they weren't willing to sell it because they wanted to do their own prequel, sequel TV series for Clarice, which they did do, but it only lasted one season. So, and that was very recent. So I'm not, maybe if the studio that owns the rights of that character wants to release those rights and give them to, I think it's Brian Fuller who wrote the show. Maybe they will. But the difficult thing, I think, is that in the third season, they kind of took a lot of the elements from Silence of the Lambs and put them onto different characters. I think because they knew that they might not get the chance to tell that story elsewhere. But if they did have the opportunity to, I think it would be amazing. I really think that it would be brilliant.
Same. I need to see, essentially, Hannibal's release, his escape. I need to see Mads Mikkelsen doing that, because that's going to be horrifying in all the best ways.
And it would be interesting to see that series come back after all these years, because there is a massive gap in between Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs. So it would be very interesting to see that. So I, now that the studio have tried their Clarice TV show, and it didn't work out the way that they wanted it to. I'm kind of hoping that they'll give the rights over and they'll be able to actually continue that, because that show was one of my absolute faves while it was going. I was really disappointed when it got cancelled.
Same here. It's not every show that sews up a person inside a horse and just has you asking for more, essentially.
Yeah, oh my god, if anyone has never seen the show and they're listening to this, they're going to be like, sews them into what? But there were some, yeah, there were some grotesque moments in that show, but the way that it was good, honestly, if you have the chance, sit down and watch all three seasons of Hannibal and then get back to us and tell us what you think. Why don't we lead the charge in bringing it back? We're going to start a Twitter campaign and we're going to get this show back on the air. That would be the dream of 2023.
Oh,
let's
yes.
start manifesting that. So it seems pretty obvious, but I have to ask the question because it is part of this podcast, but which film did you prefer of the two?
Well, I'm not going to say either film were enjoyable, but the Hunt was easily the better film in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree that it is. The Hunt is not an enjoyable film, but not because it's bad, just because it does exactly what it sets out to do. It makes you feel uncomfortable. And like I said earlier, if you want to see some impeccable acting, then this is the film to go for. I like to ask people if they have any other actors, directors that they think I should discuss on this podcast. So is there anybody else that you think?
I think after her recent Oscar win, Michelle Yeoh is a great choice. I mean, the way her career has gone from martial arts superstar to a phenomenal talent Hollywood just has no idea to utilize, to one hell of a comeback getting the recognition she deserves, I think she'd be a very good episode.
That's a really, really good choice. Mm. Oh, I'll have to bring you back for it.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes. Yeah, that would be so good, because you're right. Her career is just like spanned for so long and so many different things. It would be so interesting. And usually when you have someone who's had such a long career, their bottom film is a very interesting one.
In that regard, Samuel L. Jackson, maybe.
Oh, no one's ever suggested Samuel Jackson, but also would be a really good choice.
Mm.
I'll add them to the list.
And for a director, George Miller, I think, because we all know what the highest rated one's going to be, but the lowest rated one, it will be an interesting contrast because it's probably going to be one of his animated films.
Mm. Yeah, I want to do a few more directors actually on this. Because I've only done a couple, and I think that's always an interesting thing to go at it from a director's point of view. Because, you know, acting's my bag, that's what I do, but it's always interesting to see the different lens. So do you want to just tell everybody where they can find you on the socials, what you're up to, anything you want to tell the people?
Yes, so I'm on social, whatever social media we're on, at RoddersJ04, that's spelled with two D's, and I'm a film critic, and the majority of my writings can be found on my website, thereviewingrodders.co.uk, again with two D's it's spelled. So yeah, come check that out if you want to see what I'm thinking about films.
Amazing. As always, you can follow the podcast at Better Bad Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Jess_Rolland. I'm always looking for guests, so if you want to join me and discuss some lovely actor or director, then let me know. Sadly, this will be the final episode of season 2 before we go on a little break while I catch up with some life stuff, but we will be back later on in the year, so I will be looking for some more guests to get recording with, so please get in contact. Thank you so much for joining me today, James. I hope you've had fun.
Yes, this has been a great chat. Thank you very much for having me. I'll definitely come on again for Michelle Yeoh. Just say anytime, anywhere.
Yes, amazing. I would love to have you back. But yeah, I'll just say to the listeners, thank you so much, and I'll see you next time on Better Than Bad.